Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Thanks, Brian. We're getting messages on that last piece about whether people who have Irish passports and live overseas should be allowed to vote. A listener says all Irish passport holders should be able to vote in all elections. Another one, Irish citizens living abroad shouldn't have the right to vote. For a start, they won't be affected by the result. And that's one of the points Declan was making. Irish residents will be also. They'll probably be out of touch with who's who and what they stand for. Another listener has two reasons why it shouldn't happen. Voting for expats will cause additional costs, and expats contribute zero taxes to support costs of voting or running the country. Emma said, you may have expats who are interested in coming home, so they want to have an influence on the type of country that they're coming home to. 51551 for your messages on that or any of the topics we're discussing on the programme today. Now, the family of Annie McCarrick have revealed that someone she knew physically assaulted her before she disappeared in Dublin 30 years ago. And they've said they tried to share that information with Gardaí. The American woman was 27 at the time and vanished in March of 1993. This information is in a new documentary called Missing, Beyond the Vanishing Triangle. It will be broadcast on RTE1 tonight at 9.35, and Mick Pilo, reporter, joins me in the studio. Mick, you're very welcome. It's good to have you with us here today. So it's a two-part documentary. The first part's on tonight, the next one is next week, and you focus on the story of Annie McCarrick, don't you? You have some new and really very interesting information about that case and about what happened at the time. So take us through what you found.
Yeah, well, the series is about a sort of a critical look at this notion of a vanishing triangle, where women mysteriously disappeared in the 1990s, because a significant number of women disappeared in the 1990s and their bodies have never been found. Their cases haven't been solved. And we're asking why. Why is this? Why are these cases never solved? And as a starting point, we deal with the Annie McCarrick case, because hers is the first woman who disappeared in 1993. Her body has never been found. The new information is interesting because what we discovered was that Annie had been 3 years in Ireland doing a degree in Maynooth. Her parents, she fell in love with Ireland. And her parents, she's an only child. Her parents were sort of saying, look, Annie, before you decide to settle in Ireland, will you come home and finish your master's here in New York, in New Jersey? So she did do that reluctantly. And in January 1993, she said, I'm going to go back to Ireland, and arrives back in Ireland to settle here, to try and to establish herself here. She now has a degree. She could actually go teaching if she wants. She has to do a HDIP. So that's where she's at. Two of her friends visit her. Her close friends. And Annie's the kind of woman, I feel as if I know her, Claire. It's extraordinary.
At this stage, yeah.
Because I've been in her life for so long, and her family's life. But she was an extraordinary woman who had friends all over the place. She was a gregarious, easygoing woman. And two of her friends visited her in Ireland in January, about a month and a half before she disappeared. Now, when she disappears off the face of the earth on the 26th of March 1993, her family don't know what happened to her. So, and they immediately assume something's wrong. So they arrive here in Ireland within days. Her mother arrives. Her uncle John arrives with her father. Her uncle John is a Navy, a US Air Force man. He can get things done. So they set about doing things. Her aunt Maureen, who's a very close friend of hers, almost her aunt, our confidant, is in the States. Talking to her friends, saying, do you guys know anything that happened to Annie?
The friends who came to see her.
And those and other friends, close friends of Annie. Did she say anything? And she did, seemingly. Mm-hmm. And they all put their heads together and they wrote statements. And I contacted them all. They wrote statements, and in those statements they said, this is what we think has happened. This is the concerns we have. And John Covell, Annie's and our uncle, got those faxes. Now, faxes, if you remember, I don't know, do you remember faxes? They're like telephones with printers attached to them.
Yeah.
Well, they can replicate these statements, and they came through to the B&B that John Covell was staying in and John McCarrick, and they brought these to Irishtown Garda Station. And they assumed that this would be dealt with. This stuff would be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, we think it wasn't.
We have a clip here now of one of those friends. This is Linda Ringhouse, and she was one of the group of friends who sent a fax, one of those faxes you've just explained to us. Here's a little of what she had to say about that in the documentary.
One of the things that's really frustrating is that we were never contacted by the Garda regarding our faxes and some of the information we put in. Information that, you know, to us was very telling, at least, you know, something to be questioned, but it never happened, as far as I can remember.
But you spoke to original members of the Garda investigating team, and they said they never got them.
Well, they didn't say that then. When I interviewed them first, because I assumed they had the information. So when I talked to them about some of the information that was in the faxes, because I had those faxes, and I knew how these guards had worked. They'd broken their backs trying to ensure that they pulled out all the stops to ensure that no stone was left unturned. So I knew that they had worked extremely hard. So I assumed that they had this information. But when I contacted the five people that sent the faxes over, none of them had been interviewed by a member of the Gardaí or by any police officer about them. And that didn't fit with me, because I had interviewed the guards, and I knew these guys were meticulous.
Mm. So the people who sent them assumed that the guards had them.
Yeah.
The guards didn't know they existed. Is that
where
we're at?
No, the guards had no clue they even existed.
Okay.
And so there was a problem
straight away. So the family then always assumed that the guards had these messages, these faxes, but they didn't.
No. And so if you remember the story of Annie McCarrick, if you can remember that story, and most people associate Annie McCarrick, she's the one that disappeared in Johnny Fox's pub.
Now, and up in Enniskerry.
Up around Enniskerry, up in Johnny Fox's pub. Now, the family and the guards spent a lot of time up there working, basically doing a lot of searches. And the family were wondering, why are they spending so much time up there? Because the faxes basically revealed information that pointed towards persons of interest, not just one, but persons of interest. So people that were potentially suspects who may have had motivation. And the families were wondering, why are all these searches going on up in Johnny Fox's? Why is the narrative Johnny Fox's? And so they began to start asking questions of the Gardaí. And the Gardaí, being guards, they don't reveal to families what they're doing. They're not, you know, they're cagey about how they're going to tell you what's going on.
Yes.
So the family were getting more and more frustrated. And so the family sent the guards above the investigating officers' heads, sent 20 questions to the guards based on the faxes, saying, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? Can we see these statements? Can we see this coming? And there were, you know, John McCarrick was very forceful. And they were told, sorry, you can't have any of that information.
Was that back
way
around
back,
the time?
Around the time in 1993, 94. Okay. And there was this communication, like the McCarricks hired a private detective, because they were slowly losing confidence in the guards. And in any of these missing cases, confidence is crucial. Families need confidence in guards,
of course,
the Gardaí. And there's this problem. And I couldn't get my head around what this problem was, because I saw how tirelessly these guys worked. And I could see that they fundamentally did everything they possibly could based on the information they had. So eventually, when I realised that Tom Rock, who was the bookman, the detective, he was extraordinary. He was so detailed and meticulous. So I said to Tom, if people sent you information through faxes, I assume you would have sent people out to talk to them. Of course we would. So did you get faxes with statements in them? I have no recollection of any faxes. Mm-hmm. So I showed him the faxes. And when he saw the faxes, He just couldn't believe it. Oh my God, he said. Had we that information, it would have changed the course of the investigation.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
You also have an interview with Una Wogan, and Una's mother, late mother, Margaret, she said that she saw Annie in Enniskerry. And we talked about why the focus was on that part, on Enniskerry and around Johnny Fox's. Margaret said that she saw Annie that day that she disappeared, didn't she?
Yeah. You see, and this is the other thing. The guards had information that Annie got on a bus, a number 44 bus in Ranelagh. A number 44 bus goes to Enniskerry. There was talk that Annie liked to go to Enniskerry to go for a walk. It was a Friday evening. So they were looking for information. Did anyone see Annie in Enniskerry? You know, and they sent teams of detectives to Enniskerry with questionnaires asking door to door, did anyone see Annie McCarrick? Margaret Wogan was working in Poppy's Cafe. She says she saw Annie McCarrick with a man in the cafe when she was finishing her shift just after 4 o'clock on Friday the 26th of March, the day Annie disappeared. He had a square face. She said he was a bit grumpy looking. She was really gregarious and happy looking girl. And she said she gave this information to one of the detectives. And nobody came. She gave the information. He didn't write anything down. And she thought it was odd. He's going to send somebody down to my house. I told him where I lived. Nobody came. And so she thought that was odd. Very strange. Then she sees Garda Appeals on their television, crime call. She sees a reenactment in the village and John McCarrick in the village. And she goes, should I go over and tell him that I saw his daughter? And then she said, well, the guards, I don't want to waste their time. Mm-hmm. And so there's this going on in the woman's head. So for years, this was going on. Every time 10 years goes, 15 years, 20 years, she says to her daughter, Una, will you do something about this? I can't rest. Will you contact the guards? Una tries to contact the guards again online through an online forum to try and say, look, my mom says she saw Annie McCarrick. She's insistent on this. Nobody comes near her.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't happen. Nobody came near this woman until after she had died.
Okay, and Una then in 2021, did she go to the guards and make a statement on behalf of her mother?
The guards came to her.
The guards came to her.
Eventually when, because what she revealed this somewhere to the private, McCarrick's private detective. She came and they got in touch and the guards then found out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But she felt this is third-hand information or second-hand information. My mother's dead. Better have it than not have it. But, you know, and in a way, remember what I was saying about confidence. The family, one of the things I found extraordinary with the McCarricks when I was with them, because I was with the family for a good while, was for some reason they were not confident that the guards had fully investigated the case. Mm-hmm. That didn't sit with me knowing the way that I knew how the guards had actually done this. So now all of a sudden I realise, you know, the facts is, if the guards didn't have them, I can see why the McCarricks aren't confident. And then Una Wogan's sighting is another one that shatters their confidence. Yeah. So what else was missed?
Well, you spent time, as you said, with the family, with Annie's family. Nancy McCarrick is someone who I know you got to know very well. And the case was formally upgraded to a murder investigation following a written request from Nancy. Now, I just want to play a little bit of what Nancy says she hopes for the investigation now.
As far as justice or retribution, I have no interest in it at all. My fondest wish would just be to find out what happened to her, to be able to have a grave to visit. It would be very nice to be able to do that. Mm.
Desperately sad, isn't it? Their only child. And John, Annie's father, he died back in 2009.
Yeah.
Heartbroken, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know where his little girl was gone.
Yeah. And again, remember, this series is about a number of cases. The same themes are appearing in all of them. Families dying, members dying, mothers, fathers dying, not knowing. And there's poor Nancy. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. Delighted that Drew Harris took up the offer. She asked him, would you consider upgrading this to a murder? Because she was concerned that it hadn't been fully investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And but she didn't know. Like, the thing is, they weren't able to put the pieces together. And in some way, this documentary helps put those pieces together. And she wrote to Drew Harris while we were there. We filmed her writing to him. And as a result of that, Drew Harris responded very positively towards that.
And what impact do you think now, knowing all that you do about this case, that change, that upgrade to a murder investigation will make?
Well, remember, if you look at him, one of the things we're trying to explore is why are these cases not solved? The Gardaí have huge difficulty in missing cases, in solving them. Families are wondering, because families think they know, some families think they know who killed or murdered their loved one. That's normal. They're wondering, why has the Gardaí not arrested him or arrested her or whatever else? The Gardaí have no body, no crime scene, no evidence that a crime has even been committed. Now, when a case, when a missing case happens, they don't have great powers of investigation. In a murder case,
different.
They start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So Nancy is like, this is my last chance to get my, to ensure that this case has been fully investigated. And the guards have been great to her. They've told her we will leave no stone unturned. And she's quite confident that they will do that and that they will investigate this from the start again. And she's hopeful. I mean, she's realistic as well.
Yes, having gone through all of these years.
But that she could, like she said to me, I just hope, what would be lovely is if before I die, I get to understand what happened or even just get a grave to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's extraordinary.
That's part one tonight, all about Annie McCarrick and that case. And then part two examines the cases of other missing women in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, part one also deals with another few cases as well. In episode one, we deal with the disappearance of two other women, Patricia McGauley and Mary Cummins. And again, they disappeared without trace and only for the dogged persistence of the investigating detective, John Cribbins. Those cases would not have been solved.
Yes.
And they were upgraded to murder. And we demonstrate what happens when a case is upgraded
to murder.
So you
get to see the difference.
You get to see the difference when a case begins from the start. And episode two then, we're looking at, are there links between these? Because the Gardaí did start looking at this and saying, look, in one situation, you had within 18 months, three women disappear and vanish. If that happened today, Claire, you can imagine the outcry. You know, so there was a huge public outcry then at the time. So what episode two is, the guards did establish an Operation Trace. So we look at them. We look at what they did and we look to see, did they find any links? Was there a serial killer?
Cases of Deirdre Jacob, Jojo Dollard, Fiona Sinnott, Ciara Breen, Fiona Pender, Eva Brennan, Imelda Keenan, and of course Annie McCarrick, as we have been discussing. It was an extraordinary time when you think about it now.
Yeah. You know. And I suppose it's not acceptable in many respects that these cases still remain unsolved and the families remain in the dark.
So 9:35 tonight and again next Monday. Mick, thank you very much for coming in. That's Beyond the Vanishing Triangle, which, as we said, is on tonight. Missing Beyond the Vanishing Triangle. That's Mick Pilo. Thank you, Mick. Coming up in the show in the next hour, the seventh interest rate rise has hit many mortgage holders, and financial advisor Owen McGee has advice, and he's going to take your questions on any financial problems you're facing. So 51551. That's coming up next on the programme. A little later on, we're going to be looking at the new E10 petrol, which will be at the pumps from July. So what does that mean for you, for your car, if you have a car, and for the environment and for your wallet? Find out all about that. And we've so many messages coming in about our interview earlier with Micheline Walsh and David Farrell. Micheline is 78 years old. She's facing homelessness in just a few weeks when her rental tenancy ends. And many listeners have been in touch with us to pay tribute to her for speaking publicly about her situation, saying it's just not right. It's a shameful indictment. And of course, wishing her the very best in the next few weeks. And you can listen back to that interview shortly after today's programme. We'll have it up on the RT Radio app for you as soon as we can. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.